Recording in progress.
Okay, Petra, what I'd like to do today, tomorrow, is kind of rush through the Dinim in Siman Kuf Tzadi. These halachos, as we'll see, are not particularly relevant, Bizman Hazeh. However, the fact that we've done the Gemara, hopefully, I think should tell us that that it's kedai to just go through and read the dinim to the best of our ability. So Siman Kuf Tzadi Seif Yud Aleph discusses the location where the kesem is found, and it says that only if the kesem is found in an area that it could come from the makar, only there is it going to be problematic. Now that lashon of the mechaber she'efshar she'bosha min ha-makar is a little bit difficult, because what it really means is that it is likely that it came from the makar. Presumably, any possibility that came from the makar would not be sufficient to create an issue. Now, when we talk about which areas the kesem could come, so the Gemara tells us that it means the inner thighs as opposed to the outer thighs, and also if you find the kesem on the big thumb toe, on the bohen ragel, as the Torah would say. Now, there's a machlokes between the shaft and the taz. What does that mean? Does that mean on all the toes, or does that mean only on the big toe? The Rambam writes, anywhere where it is on the top of the foot, it is going to be problematic. That would create a little bit of a concern that how could it be that anywhere on the top of the foot is problematic, but the four little toes are not problematic. There's basically not much space between them. Again, we're just like reviewing some of the dinim. The halacha is that if the kesem is found on her hands, so wherever the kesem is, because yadayim askanios hein, we assume that maybe the hand touched the osel makom, and as such, that is going to be problematic. The Pesachei Tshuva says that if the woman tells us that I am certain that I did not touch the osel makom, so in that situation, she is going to be tahora. Meaning, we do not apply the principle of Nosadol Ramya Alei De'inish of the Bala Daite. Right? Ordinarily, there's a principle in halacha that people just do stuff without paying attention. Apparently, since the woman knows that sometimes dam could end up on her hand and that would render her tumea, so therefore we do not apply that principle since she knows it could happen at any time. The Pesachei Tshuva and Oskof Gimel further quotes that even though we had the Shita of the Rambam, that a kesem al besara is going to be tumea b'kol shehu, in this case where the kesem is found on her hand, everyone would agree that you need the full shiur of ksamim. The reason for that is because there is a school in Rishonim that the only time when there is a problem, when the kesem is found on her hand, is dafka when she did not wash her hands afterwards, and when she did a full-fledged bedika. If she did not do a full-fledged bedika and wash her hand afterwards, so then it is not going to be a problem. Although the Magen Mishnah and many other Rishonim disagree with this Rashba, but in deference to the Rashba, we're going to say that Lamaisa, we're not sure that a kesem on the hand is problematic unless she did a full-fledged bedika. Moreover, in the Shi'urim of the Shevet Halevi, he basically tries to make these halachos somewhat applicable b'sman hazeh. He comments that if a woman is wearing underwear, it's exceedingly unlikely that she reached her hand into her underwear and in that way it became tumea. She would certainly remember that, so therefore we are not really concerned. If a woman cooks regularly with and she uses red meat and the like, so then there is a greater likelihood that red stuff ended up on her hand from the cooking. So in that case, there's more likelihood that the dam came from the red color, I should say, came from that meat, and that is going to be a greater likelihood that she is going to be tahora. There is a halacha that lo mechazkin on tum'ah mimakom lemakom, meaning to say that we're not worried that maybe she touched the makar and from there the dam ended up at some other place on the body. If the dam, let's say, ends up in a place on the body like the outer part of the thigh, in that sense we assume that she is tahura. The Taz in Os Yud Beis has a chiddush, where the Taz tells us that not only do we say lo mechazkinan tuma mimakom lemakom, which is a principle that's found in the Gemara, but also lo mechazkinan tahara mimakom lemakom, meaning to say, if a woman has a maka on her shoulder, the maka on the shoulder is not going to drip blood down to end up on her body. That's not the way, right? People know where your shoulders are. It doesn't end up, the dam comes onto your body. If a woman has a maka on her shoulder, we don't say that if there's dam on the inner thigh, that maybe she touched her shoulder and then touched the inner thigh. Right? And therefore, maybe the dam on the inner thigh is going to be tahar. The Taz develops this basic theme that lo mechazkinan tuma mimakom lemakom, and hu hadin lo mechazkinan tahara mimakom lemakom. We don't assume that the tahar blood came from a different area. That's the basic halacha. We don't assume that that it was going to be transferred and become mutter in that case. The Piskei Tshuva in Os Chafhei has a discussion about this Taz, and the Piskei Tshuva says that if we know for sure that she touched the area on her shoulder where there is a maka, so in that case we are going to be makel. Again, all of these halachas are effectively based on the likelihood. In the case that we know that she touched her shoulder, so therefore it is more likely that the dam came from her shoulder, or there's equal likelihood that it came from her shoulder, and equal likelihood that it came as dam nida, so in that case we can be makel. Mr. Eitan, how are you in the back?
Why
does the chiddush? Why does
the
Gemara
say?
Well, the Gemara, I think, if I remember correctly, the Gemara uses the lashon that lo mechazkinan tuma mimakom lemakom. The Taz is saying hu hadin lo mechazkinan tahara mimakom lemakom. The case, right? The Gemara has a case that blood on the shoulder is going to be okay. The Taz adds that the reason why it's okay is we don't assume that she touched the shoulder and brought the dam. The Taz is just saying,
well, it's not the
Kino. Right. Again, it could be that the Taz is not really saying a Chiddush, although, again, the Taz just points out that's Pshat in the Gemara. If that's the way you want to say it, we could say it that way. So Se'if Yud Aleph is basically dealing with a Kesem that is found on her body. So if Yud Beis talks about a kesem that is found on her shirt, there's a difference between if the kesem is found on the bottom part of the shirt and on the top part of the shirt. There's a difference if the kesem is found both on the shirt and on the body. And there's a difference also if the woman did somersaults and the like. These halachos, once again, are not relevant. Bisman has said that women wear underwear. If the underwear is tight, so in that situation, obviously we are not worried that the kesem came from her. What we commented the other day, which I think is correct, is that if you know that the underwear is not tight, so therefore, if you know the underwear is not tight, perhaps there is some sort of a concern. It says in the Shulchan Aruch from Siman Kuf Tzadivod that during the Shiva Nekiyim, you should not only have white underwear, but you should have white sheets as well. You have white sheets during the Shiva Nekiyim. The Pashta says that this is no longer necessary. The Pashta says that once you have tight-fitting underwear, the assumption is that any dam that came out will end up on that tight-fitting underwear, and therefore there is no need for white sheets during the Shiva Nekiyim. I remember when I was a chassan, and I was like going through some of these dinims, Rabbi Willey telling us that you should be very careful that when you buy sheets, you should try to have an entire pattern that's colored. You should not have a pattern that has some white in it, because if you have some white in it, so then there is going to be some concern that Dan will end up on the white card and will get involved in that Piskei Tshuva that we spoke about yesterday between the Machlokas with the Me'ot Tzedakah and the Chavos Das, and we said the Tzemach Tzedek in the name of the Alter Rebbe. We have all of these shitos, but one could argue, I mean, I don't think one could argue, I think it's very reasonable that this man has said there is no need to have white sheets at all. I think that seems to make sense. There is a discussion about whether there's a concern that when the woman bends down, perhaps the dam is going to end up on the top part of her shirt. Even though we assume that dam on the bottom part of the shirt is more likely, maybe there's a concern that you bent down and the dam will end up on the top part of the shirt. So the Shulchan Aruch basically says that we're not nervous about that. This is a little bit interesting because in the case of the woman who finds dam on her arm, the concern is that maybe the dam ends up like on the upper part of the arm because she bent down and etc. So how come by the arm we are nervous about that, whereas we're not nervous about that by bending down the body? Again, it probably has something to do with like what's likely, what's not likely, although the Sidrei Tahara says in the case of the body, the situation is that she's wearing some sort of belt. And even if she bends down, the dam will not end up on the top. He takes this situation much more seriously. In the case of the blood that is found on the sleeve in Se'if Yud Gimel, Nimtza al Beis Yad Shel Chalukah, so if it's a Makom Shemagia al Beis HaTorfa, the Pashtus is that the concern is that when the woman is wiping herself, so then some dam is going to end up on her hands. Once again, if the woman is wearing like a tight-fitted shirt and the like, so then any dam presumably would end up on the outside. If there's dam on the inside, we're not really worried that the dam came from the osom makom. There are halachos in Se'if Yud Daled, again, we're trying to go relatively quickly over here, that on a garment, if she's taking the garment on and putting it back off, putting it on and off, so in that situation, even though the dam ends up on the top of the garment and the like, there is going to be the possibility that dam is coming as dam min hamakar. The issue in general is that it depends on the likelihood. Once again, we have our excellent underwear svara, which is really a tremendous kula, although each situation is different. So if test vav...
Sorry, Rabbi, what did you say? Underwear what?
Once you say underwear, so there's no real concern that the dam ends up on the top of her... Assuming she's wearing underwear when she puts on her gown, her shirt, whatever it is, there's no concern that the dam is going to end up on the top of the shirt, because had there been dam, it would have ended up on the underwear. If there is dam on the top of the shirt, so then we can logically assume that dam came from some other area, and it is not going to create neither situation.
In the mice, if she was like, I guess she like slept with like that garment, and like I guess like,
yeah, so again, every situation depends on
top of the belt and
right. No, it depends whether she was wearing the underwear when she puts her shirt on or not. Every mitzias of the case has to be judged separately. Now, this halacha of ksamim has a number of cases where we are machmir. For example, we have in Se'if Tesavav two women who are wearing a mitpachat on their head, and you find dam on one of those mitpachot. So then in that situation, both women are tameos, because since I can't attribute the dam to woman A more than to woman B more than we attribute it to woman A, so we have to say that they are both going to be tameos. However, if only one of them is wearing a mitpachat, not the other one, so then we say that that one woman is going to be tameo. The Torah Hashlomim over here. The Torah Hashlomim in the case of Shtei and Tameos, the case where they are both wearing a mitpachat, so both women are going to be tamei. Torah Hashlomim says that the reason why we're machmir in this case is because it's a suffik d'oraisa. Because it's suffik d'oraisa, that maybe it's blood from the makor, so therefore we are going to be machmir. Now, the Torah's Hashlamim does not like this in a big way. He says, listen, there's no Hargasha. There's no chance that it is a Suffik D'Oraisa. Rather, it's a Suffik D'Rabbanon. Let me just finish the thought. Rather, it's a Suffik D'Rabbanon. And the Halachin Yerodei, assuming Kuf Yud Aleph, is if I have an Isser D'Rabbanon that's here Bevadai, and I have two pots, and I'm not sure which pot the Isser D'Rabbanon fell into, since I know that one pot is definitely problematic. Even though it's a Suffik D'Rabbanon, still I'm going to be machmir in both pots. That's the famous sugya of Shnei Shmilat being of Suffin. The issue that comes up is whether this din is only when you ask the shayla b'vas avas, or is the din even when you ask the shayla b'za'achazeh. So the Sidrei Tahara, excuse me, the Taras Hashlamim over here sends you to his discussion later on. He's of the opinion, if I'm not mistaken, that it's only when you ask the shayla b'vas avas, not the ask the shayla b'za'achazeh. Someone had a comment. Yeah.
Who said that it's a
Suffolk D'Oraisa?
Who says that it's a
Suffolk D'Oraisa? So the Levush says it's a Suffolk D'Oraisa. The Taras Hashlamim in Oskov quotes, according to Levush, it's a Suffolk D'Oraisa. The Taras Hashlamim jumps up and down and says it can't possibly be a Suffolk D'Oraisa because since there's no Hargasha, then there's only Drabbanon. But we know that if you have a Suffolk Drabbanon, you can't attribute it to one more than the other, they're both going to be Tomei. Now, what's the Pshat in the Levush? 1 second, Akiva. The Pshat in the Levush, how come he says it's a Suffolk D'Oraisa? So many of the Achrayim say that the Pshat in the Levush is as follows. The Shevet HaLevi has it. Perhaps we know that this case is that the two women are both wearing a mikpachat on their head and they're both sleeping. When women are sleeping, there is a possibility that she had a hargosha, but she didn't notice it. She kind of slept through the hargosha. Now, even though the Gemara tells us on Daf Gimel that a hargosha is like a serious thing that you notice, and if you have your hargosha, you're going to wake up in the middle of the night from your hargosha. But maybe that was only Bizman Ehem, that the hargosha was a more intense hargosha. Bizman Hazat, and especially if you're choshish for hargosha of Zivas Davralach, so then it could be that you're not going to wake up from it. That seems to be the pshat in the Levush. This is a famous tshuva of the Teshuvas Shai. The Teshuvas Shai basically tries to argue. You know, there are certain Jews who try to come up with chumras, and they're quite successful sometimes. Like the Mishkan Yankov tried to pass out every single Erev in Europe. That was his objective in life. The Teshuvah Shai tries to get rid of all the halachos of Ksamim, does not necessarily. He says, listen, every single case is a Suffolk Hargasha. We don't know for sure that she didn't have a Hargasha. Maybe she had a Hargasha and she didn't feel it, especially when Zivas Davralach is considered a Hargasha, etc., etc., etc. Someone told me the other day that he thinks that Rav Schechter holds this way and didn't have a chance to ask Rav Schechter, that Rav Schechter feels basically that every kesem, even a tiny bit, even if it ends up on being colored, etc., is a potential hargosha, and therefore we have to be choshesh. I think in our yeshiva, perhaps Rav Schechter is not in the mainstream shita. In our yeshiva, generally we're maple. We have dinim of ksamim. We're not going to hold this to Shura Shai, that every case of a kesem is a potential d'oraisa. What the Shevet HaLevi is adding is that this Teshuvah Shai actually has an earlier precedent in the Levush. I keep it, now I'm ready for you.
Is this one of those Svek Sveika? Can you just say that the whole concept of
some
is one
Svek,
and then the next Svek is which woman, I guess, it belongs to?
So we don't say a Svek apparently, unless I can attribute it more to one than to the other. If they both are mutal b'safek, it can't be that I'll say a spek speka in a situation that's going to end up being a stira minei ubek. Right? What the spek speka, maybe I'm tamei, right? Because...
No, but even going back to the first suffek,
is like maybe the dam came in alba.
Yeah.
So that's a regular din of ksamen, suffek one. Now, you want to tell me I have another suffix that maybe woman A is tamei, and not 1 second. Let's kind of spin it out. Maybe woman A is tamei, not woman B. Maybe woman B, not woman A. Elamai and woman Matahir, both women. That we can't do, right? Like the sugya of Shnei Shevilin, we can't say a spek speka and end up with a stira situation. You can't be Matahir both women because of the spek speka. If I can't be Matahir both, so then I have to be Matahir both. That's the basic
Cheshbin. For the first suffix, it's the first suffix when you arise about the whole suffix about Ksamim, it could be that meaning the starting point is that both of them can talk.
The first suffix is not enough for Maisa. Me'ezasi Bashahi. The first suffix is not enough to be Metaher. Were it to be enough to be Metaher, I just got rid of the entire halach of Ksamim. Like, forget about the last couple of Krakim of the Masechta. Yeah, we don't want to do that. Right? We don't want to do that. Is that a hand up, Eitan?
Yeah. Isn't that part of what we said how Rebbe Eliezer holds today?
Slowly?
Isn't that kind of how we say that Rebbe Eliezer holds today? That
all the vegetables today is a
spit? No. That Rebbe Eliezer holds by basically there's no thing summoned because he's a. Each one is a
hargosha,
no?
Again, all the achrayim who assume that zivus dovarlach is a hargosha have a much harder time with the din of ksamim, and they have to say the din of ksamim apply only when you don't have a zivus dovarlach, when you don't have that sensation. The chiddush of the levush is, even though the woman did not have that sensation, let's be honest, to say that because zivus dovarlach is a hargosha kala, so therefore she's going to sleep through it. I don't know about you, but when I feel I have to urinate in the middle of the night, I wake up, no? To assume that you're going to sleep through that hargasha, I think even though it's a hargasha kala, is quite an assumption. When the Gemara in Daf Gimel says that women wake up, now I understand, like Rashi writes over there in Daf Gimel, and Rashi has a few places in the Masechta, Nun Zayin and Beis, Rashi has that hargasha has to be sa'ar. We reveal that Hargosha is not Sa'ar. The Pashto says you're going to wake up from the Hargosha. I think that is a more reasonable assumption. Let's go on. Se'if Tes Zayin. If a woman has a Maka on her neck, so in that case, even if the Dam ends up at the bottom of her dress, where ordinarily there's more of a Svara that the Dam came from the Osamakam, is Tameh. But because there's a maka on her neck, we say, well, she bent her neck in a way that the dam ended up on her body, and therefore it is going to be tahar. That seems to be the halacha. The shach writes that if you have a maka, which is bitside tzavara, so then we're going to assume that the dam could not come from the maka. But if the dam is b'tzav ara mamish, so then it came from the maka on the tzavar. Now, the halacha by all makos in Hilchas Nida is that even if it's a maka that we do not know is motzi dam, we can still be makel. Since ksamim is drabanan, even if it is not currently bleeding, we are going to be makel. The lashon of the Mishnah that we'll talk about later on is makashi yecholah lehigara lahotzi dam. Right? If I have a cut and I have a scab that develops on top of the cut, I could rub against that scab and that can cause blood to come out, that is still going to be tolerable by ksamim. Perhaps by dinam d'oraisa, we're not going to make such a tliya on a makay shayichola lehigala, but that's something I want to talk about in 5 minutes.
Would that apply to pimple? That apply to pimples
also? A pimple also, yeah, for sure. I know I have a pimple, and my pimple sometimes, I rub against it and it bleeds. L'cha'ora, that should apply also. The dinim of tliya in blood, the Piskei Tshuva points out, it applies even if you have a nosebleed. Again, it has to be reasonable. You know, if I have some acne on the side of my face, it's not right. That's what the shach is basically saying. If it's on the side, so then we're not going to assume. It's not likely it ends up connected to some makom. Hi, Tophia.
Would remedy total on a pimple? Because that seems like a big cooler, because many women have pimples.
I'm happy with coolers. Coolers are awesome. I remember one time I was talking to the father of a certain person in this class about a psak that they said in the name of Chaim Kanievsky, that anyone who has a smartphone is posel eidos. And the certain father of a certain person in this classroom currently is like, oh, that is awesome. We can just be make one every single aguna shayla in the United States today. That's like the best thing ever. Yehuda Dov, does that resonate with you?
No.
Okay, didn't resonate with your father? Awesome. The point is that kulas are great. Sometimes, obviously an aguna situation is much more serious than a nida situation, but if we can be mako, so that's kind of awesome. We would like kulas to the best of our ability. Now, let's say a woman has a kesem both lamayla and lamata. That means that the kesem that came lamayla is clearly not from her body. The kesem lamata might be from her body. Once I know that some of the stain on her, once I know that some of the blood on her is not from her, so I could be tayla shalmata b'mayla. I'm going to say that since there is some dam lamala, which is okay, so there is also no problem on the dam that is lamata. The Achrayim point out, even though the dam lamala is on the begin, the dam lamata is on gufa, I could still be mekel. Even though the dam lamata is larger than the dam lamayla, right? This halacha of tolin shalmata b'mayla, I could still be mekel. However, if the dam lamala is less than a gris, the dam lamala is less than a gris va'od, so then in that situation, I'm saying that the dam lamala is not really dam that came from the outside. It's just like some squashed bug. So in that situation, the dam lamata is going to be tame. That is the halacha the way it appears in the Shulchan Aruch in Se'if Yudzayin, that we're told of the Elyon and Tachton. Now, if you look in the Bane HaShulchan Sif Katan Kuf Pei Hei, he has an Arichus Dvarim. The way I presented it is that even if the Kesem Lamata is larger than the one Lamala, and even if one Lamata is Begufa, and the one Lamala is on Chalukka, we're still going to be Tola, the Bane HaShulchan gets like very complicated. He says, well, maybe you can't have all the permutations together, etc. Okay, this is the discussion. Hagon Reb Kiva Eger, I'll get to you in a second, Eitan. Hagon Reb Kiva Eger over here has a discussion about whether we could do this tliya betoch gimel yamim harishonim the shivul nikim. Ordinarily, we don't do tliyas in the first 3 days of the shivul nikim. If a tliya is super duper strong, we can do it. Reb Kiva Eger tainis that this tliya of lamayla lamata, such a strong tliya, we can even do it in the first 3 days of the Shiva Nikiyim. Hold that, and I want to elaborate on it in 1 minute. Eitan.
In the case where the Dalot Lamala is less than a gris va'od, why is it true if also the Lamata is also less than a gris va'od? Can we say that
there are two malachot? Again, if the dam lamala is less than the gris va'od, so that means that lamala I had a ma'acholas. I don't assume that dam of a ma'acholas is going to trickle down from lamala to the lamata. If it's dam from some external source, if it's like a splash, so then I can assume that it trickled down. And that can be tola shomato dolmaiwa. But if it's a ma'acholas, I can't.
Why can't we assume that there was just another
macholas?
There's other cases where we say that.
So then we get into the issue of that we're not told of the macholas, let's say, with the kesem shebegufa, which we had a number of
explanations. Oh, the second one.
Assume that the second one is that the one lamata is begufa. Right, if the one lamata is bevigda and it's less than a macholas, so then the one lamata I'm told of macholas anyway. And that's just fine. But if the one lamata is bibisoro, so then I don't have that kula. Reb Kiva Eger also discusses over here about whether there's a tliya with shachar and edom. That's an issue that we discussed earlier. Let's get into Sif Yud Ches. Sif Yud Ches begins with a striking comment that since Ksamim is Drabunun, that's why we are Tola. Right? That's what it says. That is really difficult because we have cases where it's an issue that d'oraisa, for example, in Sif Chaf is a case that the husband urinates. Well, excuse me, not urinates. The husband has blood that comes out from the pi ha'ama. There's blood that comes out from him, so the wife can be tola on the husband. When the dam comes out, b'shas tashmish, right? She wipes herself right after tashmish, and there's blood. We could say, since we know that the husband is rugel, let's say smimenu dam, the husband has had dam that comes out of him. There's a discussion in the Achrenim. Does rugel mean two times or three times? It's already happened a few times, so therefore she can be tola on him. Now this case is v'chora safek d'oraisa. No? It's presumably a safek d'oraisa because it is hargashas shamash, which the Gemara tells us on Menches, and Zayin on Beis Menches, is a potential d'oraisa. Still, I am tola, even though it's a potential d'oraisa. We have other dinim. There's a whole simon called Kuf Pei Zayin, which is about raw dam machmas tashmash. A woman who sees dam because of sex. So in that situation, we assume that if it happens three times, she has to get divorced from her husband. That's the halacha. But if there's a tliya, so then we're making. Now that case is a shayla on the d'oraisa. Right? You're seeing dam machmas tashmash. The dam is coming during sex, right after sex. So shayla on d'oraisa. Still, we have tliyas. We have tliyas by d'oraisas also in Hilchos Treifos. Right, we spoke about the case already, that you shaft the animal and you find the lung, and the lung has a hole in it. If you can attribute that hole to some animals or the like that are hanging around there, so then we assume that it is not going to be a trefa. That's a d'oraisa! How's there tliyas on d'oraisas? So the lechem v'simla, the heiliga kitzur shulchan aruch, right? That there are tliyas and d'oraisas just like there are tliyas and drabanan. But you have to read this sif carefully. In Sif Yud Ches it says, since ksamim drabanan, mekilen v'tolan b'chol davar shi'chola letlos. By a drabanan, we're tolan on anything. By a drabanan, we assume, even if it is, pardon the Yiddish, far-fetched, we are going to say, listen, it could have happened. It's not likely. Big whoop if it's not likely. It could have happened by a drabbanon, since the whole din of Ksamim is a ganzer drabbanon, the whole din is machma suffik anyway, like Akiva likes to develop. So if that's the case, any suffik koldahu is going to be okay on drabbanons. This gentleman opens up a Pandora's box in terms of reanalyzing Simen Kuf Tzadik. Because all of the super kulas, right? The Gemara tells us that a woman comes in front of Reb Kiva, and she says she has a kesem which she lost. So Reb Kiva says maybe you had a makkah, and therefore it's okay. Shema makkah haysabech. That means Reb Kiva is makel, even though we don't know that she had a real makkah. Maybe you had a makkah. Apparently she lost the eid habadika. Still, Reb Kiva's making. It's a suffix called it. That's true by regular summon by a drabbanan. If it's a potential d'oraisa, we could not be making. The Rishonim all point out that ain't shrichim l'damos, right? Meaning that we're tola. It says in Shulchan Aruch that we are tola edom be'edom. No, we're tola sifchaf gimel. We're tola red with red. The Rai that writes in the Sefer Balei HaNefesh in Sha'ar Gimol on Halacha Yud, that I'm tola red by red. Let's say I'm working with red paint. I'm playing with red crayons. Right? The woman is helping her kids color. So I'm tola edom be'edom. And I don't have to be makif. I don't have to say, oh, I'll take this and I'll put it next to this and I'll see if it's the same shade or not. Drabonon, a maple. Now, if it's a d'oraisa, l'cha'ira, you would have to be makif. Therefore, by cases of eicha'in or bodok in Se'if Lama Gimel Lama Dalet, which we treat with the deem of ksamen, but it's after a bedikah, it's a potential deraisa. So in that case, I remember speaking about this years ago, I have in my note, I think Yosef Bronstein was in my share at that point, and I remember that Yosef Bronstein had this ha'ara that by eicha'in or bodok, l'cha'ira, we have to be machmir, because it is a potential deraisa. That's what emerges. Now, the Shevet HaLevi has the following comment. He says, you can't get carried away with this idea. This idea that I'm told on any potential suffix could be interpreted to mean that you don't need rabbis. Maya Hanile Rabbonim. You don't need anyone who could potentially answer Shilas. Because there's a suffix called the who, maybe, chick, chack, boom, right? I'm going to go on everything. So we're not going to do that. The pashtus is that you're not allowed to close your eyes and say, oh, maybe. In that case of Reb Kiva, so the kesem was lost. In that case, because the kesem was lost, so Reb Kiva says, maybe there's a makkah. That's how we're going to be okay. But short of that, I'm not going to just close my eyes and be makel. I'm only going to be makel, the Shevet HaLevi points out, if I genuinely have a suffer. And then he goes a step further. He says, let's say there's a chacham be'ir, who taka knows how to distinguish between the shades. So in that case, you have to be machmir also. Because in that case, you have a responsibility to go to the chacham. There is a huge discussion about this, and we spoke about it the other day, about the halachos of a kesem that's lost. So one cannot say that it's just mutter because safek drabon mahatam. Because if it's a safek chesaron yediya, right, Reb Kiva Eger in Se'if Chaf Gimel talks about in the case of red with red, maybe it's chesaron yediya because you could always check are you the zayin samamanim. Even though today we don't know what those zayin samamanim are. But, says Reb Kiva Eger, it could be that it's a suffix chesaron yediya, and in some tzadik chesif gimel, we pass in a suffix chesaron yediya is not really a suffix. If the eight is lost, it's okay. If the eight is not lost, so then the fact that potentially I could check whether it is dam or it's seva based on the zayin samamonim, even though bisman hazah I can't do that checking because I no longer know what those zayin samamonim are, that doesn't really create a suffix. That still is a suffix. There's a difference between the case where the kesem is lost and the case where the kesem is present and I can't check it out. What about going to a microscope? Rabbi Willig very often takes kesemim to the, or bedikah course to the microscope in the MTA lab. Very often, if there's a tiny spot on the bedikah course, Rabbi Willig will look at it. He'll say, that's got to be a string. Sometimes you have like red threads that got caught on the bedikah course. And you go to a microscope and you look at it. We'll do that, wahakya. In other words, I would have to be machmir in the bedikah cloth because there's a tiny bit of red there. But if I have a microscope and I can use the microscope, wahakya, that I'll do. But the fact that there is a microscope available in the MTA lab, does that mean I'm mechuyev all the time to take every shayla and bring it to the microscope and figure out? Or do I say, no, red, it's okay. The pashtus is that no posek says that you have to take every single shayla to the microscope. The pashtus is that you don't have to be matriarch yourself so much. Even this din that we said from the Shevet HaLevi, that if there's a chacham be'ir, you have to go to the chacham be'ir, who knows the distinction, that's only if it's like a relatively easy thing to do. If it's not an easy thing to do, the pashtus is you do not have to go out of your way to go into the microscope to to check whether it's a tzeva or not, if it looks to you, and you are a baki, it looks to you like it's potentially dam, you don't have to check, oh, maybe I could look in the microscope and see, or I could do, there's a chemical test that you could do, no? Whether, I think, uterine blood or all blood, you could drop some iodine on it, any chemistry majors over here, and you could, right, no chemistry majors? How'd this happen? Right, and you could tell if it's blood or if it's some sort of dye. The pashtus is that that is not required, because we're toila edoin be'edoin. But how far I go with this is really a question that's worthwhile investigating. Okay, gentlemen, I thought I'd get farther today, and we got through Se'if Yud Ches tomorrow, Yitz Hashem. I want to just keep on going. I'd like to get through Lamed Hey, if possible, tomorrow. What I would recommend, again, is not learning the Torah and Beis Yosef on these Se'ifim, just trying to make a Mechaber, Mechaber, Shach, Pesach Tshuva, that type of thing, just to keep the pace going. And I want to finish Kuf Tzadi soon and then move on to Kuf Tzadi Aleph, which is a major subject. Okay, gentlemen, have a great day.
Can I start with your testimony?